Committee meeting to order. So.
Drop a gavel on.
There you go.
I've never used it, so I had to see how it felt.
It's fun, isn't it?
The microphone was on. We need approval for the April, both sets of April minutes.
Motion.
All in favor? Opposed? All right. Marie.
Good morning.
Morning.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
I would like to request permission to have a public hearing for the land submitted for the inclusion in the certified agricultural districts during the 2023 annual 30-day period. We had two parcels that were submitted. The Ag and Farmland Protection Board met. They voted on them and did approve them. So now we have to have the public hearing and the legislature approve them if they wish.
Second.
Questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries.
Thanks.
Coffee cart. I think we'll, are you all okay with us? We might need to have an executive session on coffee cart, talking about some stuff, contract related. Anybody have any problem with moving that behind Jamie? IDA, come on up.
Long debate on coffee cart.
Good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's okay on this rainy, chilly day, but I wanted to just give you a few updates on some things that we've got going on. And apologize for not having been here for the last few meetings. So just so you know, the IDA, we're in the process of wrapping up our 2022 reporting period. So, as part of that process, we gather information on all of our projects. And I figured this would be a good opportunity to give you a little bit of an overview and do a little bit of a data dump so you can, see and understand the impact of the work that you all support and we do through the IDA. So I'm going to go through some of these. Feel free at any time to just, if you have any questions, please interrupt me because I'm going to start rattling through some of these numbers. So during the 2022 reporting period, which basically is the calendar year, the IDA had 59 active projects. And all of this information does get submitted to New York State and has been through the Paris system. Those projects last year leveraged a record investment for the IDA of just over $740 million in investment just in 2022 alone. That represented a single year increase of $553 million. So to say that we had a lot going on last year is an accurate statement. Those projects and the projects from last year and all 59 of the projects generated over $11 million in pilot revenue that went to communities like the county, the school districts, and the municipalities. That's a figure that I would just like to pause on a little bit because that's new investment. That's new revenue that is generated through IDA projects. Our pilots only impact new assessed revenue. We do not take revenue out of the market. We only impact on new investment and new revenue that is being generated as part of the projects we support. So that $11.1 million in pilot revenue in 2022 represents a $383,000 increase from the prior year. And for the county, that represents over $2.2 million in new revenue into the county budget. So out of that $11 million, $2.2 million of that goes directly to the county to support all of the work that you do here. In addition, active IDA projects supported 6,901 jobs in 2022, which was an increase of 200 over the previous year. That 2022 employment also accounted for just over $1 billion in payroll, which was $119 million more than the prior year. So when you look at not only the pilot revenue that's being generated, you look at the employment impact, that's over $1 billion of new revenue that's going into the communities because of the projects that have been generated through the IDA. Now, with that, when you dig into those employment numbers a little bit more, you see a trend that companies are still trying to recover from the impacts of COVID. In 2022, we did have 20 companies who failed to either reach or maintain, and that's a point that I want to make, is that sometimes projects hit their employment goals, but because most of our IDA benefits encompass a 10 or 20 year period, the employment numbers ebb and flow. So when I say there were 20 companies who failed to either reach or maintain, you know, some of them actually have reached their employment goals, but for whatever reason, they have fallen below. So we reach out to them annually to see what's going on and to understand, you know, what they're trying to do to get those numbers back up. So those 20 companies resulted in 1,496 jobs of what we consider underperformance. They just didn't, you know, we should have had 1,500 more jobs as part of our projects. But again, we started peeling the layers back a little bit more. And we see that three of those projects are still within what we consider the three-year employment creation window. So we give all of our projects 3 years to ramp up and get to that employment. So Clark Specialty, LP Building Solutions, and Northside Place are all within that three-year window, which represents just over 60 jobs of that 1,496. So again, we peel the layers back a little bit more, and we see that we have three projects that have consistently failed to either reach or maintain those employment commitments. Two of those projects were the legacy Corning Photonics projects, and we all know what happened to Corning Photonics, during the photonics bubble and the tech burst. And then there was the Corning C building, which is the large 5-story building that is right next to the highway in Corning that they always put Noel on, in at Christmas time. That project was going to get a complete rehab and was in the process of getting a complete rehab when COVID hit, and Corning has not repopulated that building yet. So those three projects total 1,978 jobs, and they're actually coming off the IDA, benefits roll. So, we're terminating the benefits for all three of those projects. So if you remove those three projects from our numbers and you factor in the employment that they should have created, our projects are actually 544 jobs better than what we had originally projected. So, I would like to say that, we've actually done a pretty good job of working with our companies to make sure that they have reached or maintained those employment goals that they originally set at time of application. So next year, when we remove those photonics projects and that C building project, I think what you'll see is our numbers turn around when we come back and report this information to the legislature then.
So Jamie.
Yep.
So when you talk about rolling back those benefits, what are those benefits that those companies will no longer have?
So primarily it's property tax. The photonics projects are property tax.
So they come off.
They're going right on the tax rolls.
Okay.
Yep. And the Corning C building, that one was a unique one because all they asked for was the sales tax benefit on the rehabilitation. They didn't ask for a property tax abatement on that. So they did receive the sales tax on the renovations. The renovations are complete. The building is gorgeous and it's a high-tech building. But until they figure out what they're going to do, that project benefit period is over. So we're now in the process of going through the remainder of those projects, as those 20 projects, which now, when you take those six projects out of it, is really down to 16. We're in the process of reaching out to them and understanding, what's happened, what's causing the impact. And we're getting a variety of responses. We don't have them all back yet, but I'll point out the Corning Hilton Garden Inn. That one just popped into my mind. They are 10 jobs under where they had projected that they would be, but they've got 20 openings that they can't fill. So, some of the projects are simply, we've got openings, and if we could fill these openings, then we could reach our job goals. Others, they're just, Gunlock is an example of this. Their market has shifted, and they just don't have the same level of sales that they originally had. So, their employment numbers are down. So all of this information, once we get it gathered, will be presented to our board of directors in June, you know, with staff recommendations on how to, you know, what we're recommending as far as moving forward with these projects, you know, whether or not we continue to monitor them, give them more time. And all of that, once the board acts on that, that's all going to be posted on our website with a detailed report. So if any of you are interested, I would say wait till, you know, the end of June or beginning of July, and you can get on our website and you actually see the detailed report with all of this information and these numbers, you know, and understand, you know, what the IDA is doing to continue to monitor this. And I think this is important because, you know, we see as part of the state budget process, you know, some criticisms of IDAs for not sharing this level of information. And it's all public information. We have nothing to hide. It's all on the Paris report that we submit. But what's not there is this level of detail that we like to go into to understand how our projects are performing. Any questions on performance from 2022? They're almost 100 employees over where they had originally committed, because I think the original commitment was 150, and the last I knew they were almost I'm looking at Jill. We were out there just the other day. 225. Yeah, 225, something like that. So I mean, they're doing very well, and they're spending a lot of money, making a lot of investments. So
they're bringing two more lines back in. The twist string cheese is going to be all made back in there by mid-year. So
I'm glad he's announcing this that way. I don't have to. So, but yeah, they're bringing Polio back. You know, they purchased it from Kraft. They're bringing the Polio cheese lines back. Great. The twist, you know, cheese that, you know, is one of those products, and they're doing well. They're very happy. So that is, you know, one of those projects that has exceeded, you know, the job criteria. Just a couple of other, you know, things to some highlights, and then I'm happy to answer any questions. You know, we're still seeing a lot of, I would actually say, an increase in renewable energy. The solar interest has picked back up. You know, Jill handles all of our solar in our project, and she kicks me out of her office on a regular basis because she's got so many solar projects that she's working on. I say the interest, they're coming to us, they're asking for it. We're, you know, working on getting some of them approved. Solar is one of those, one of those industries that we sit back and, you know, we try to make sure that what we do is supportive of what the communities want, and that these projects actually get built. And that's one of the discussions we had at the board last week, was, you know, putting some limitations on our approvals on some of these projects, because what we're seeing is they're getting the approvals, they're actually closing with us, and then they're sitting there, and it's causing issues with the municipalities on their assessments and their tax rolls. And, you know, we talk with Wendy Jordan all the time about, well, should this one be taxed, should it not be taxed? So we've actually, you know, set some parameters around, you know, if you come to us, here's what our expectations are. And if you don't meet those expectations, we're not just going to keep kicking the can down the road. So, but, you know, we are seeing an increased interest in primarily solar. Yes.
Isn't one of the problems for getting these projects online is that the grid doesn't have the capacity to support it all?
So that is an issue, but I would say it's a separate issue than what we're seeing with the solar projects not advancing. I think if we had the grid capacity, I'm fairly certain that if we had the grid capacity, we would see the number of projects coming to us and through the communities balloon even more than what we're seeing. The projects that we're seeing have found areas where there is grid capacity. One of the interesting things is we've had a couple of projects, and I don't know if this is a trend, which most of what we've seen have been 5-megawatt projects, which are the community solar projects. We're seeing some smaller ones start to come through now because they're finding, you know, I don't want to say holes in the grid, but they're finding, you know, little bits of capacity in the grid. So the projects are actually starting to get a little bit smaller from what we're seeing. Now, you know, that could be a trend. It could just be an anomaly. But if the grid capacity were to increase, which there are plans to have that done, you're going to see interest in renewable energy skyrocket in Steuben County.
As a follow up, I think the solar panel life expectancy is like 20 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. That begs the question, how are they going to recycle all of these? Is there anything in the pipeline for addressing that?
So, you know, I know there are companies looking at recycling of panels. You know, Momentum is one of the local companies that is looking at that. I'm sure there are others around the country and the globe that are looking at the recycling of these panels. As the industry evolves, I think you're going to see more interest in those areas, but I can't tell you right now what's going to happen in 20 years, other than we do require that there be a decommissioning bond on every one of our projects in the name of the community. And that is something that we gather every year as part of our process that we just went over. When we reach out to these companies on performances, we do mandate that they show us that bond is still in place for decommissioning. So what happens to those panels in 20 years? I think there's, you know, a lot of question about that and how, you know, how that's going to occur and what's going to happen with those panels.
Jamie, yep. Quick question. This body has always been concerned about using prime farmland. Mm-hmm. Are we still looking at that as an issue, or is it?
I think we're going to have to continue to look at that as an issue. You know, we always try to, you know, understand where these projects are located and how it's impacting, you know, the land use regulations and farmland. We don't have any mandates at the IDA. You know, our only mandate is that it has to go through the local community siting process before we will give final action on it. So the smaller projects, you know, all have to go through the local community's siting process. We know that there are some larger projects out there that are going to go through the state, what they call the ORES process, which is the state's process, which is completely, you know, different and takes some of that review out of the local community's hands. How the state is looking at farmland preservation, you know, I don't know. And I know, Marie, that was a big question when we were at the Farmland Protection Board meeting. There was a lot of discussion, you know, about solar and land use regulations and, you know, agriculture, you know, being able to coexist with the solar project. So I, Carol, I wish I had an answer for you other than it is a topic of discussion.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead, Bob.
One of the problems with the agricultural part of it is some outfit comes in and offers $2,000 an acre a year to the farm that's, you know, barely breaking even. They get their attention and they figure you might as well go for the cash. Mm-hmm. That's going to be an issue with
there is a little bit of a rub between agriculture and limiting agriculture's ability to use their property for something like this, you know, and I think, you know, Bob's right. And I grew up on a dairy farm in Pennsylvania. And I know if my parents got $2,000 an acre on this 14 acre field to put, you know, solar panels on, they'd go find someplace else to grow corn. I just know that personally, and I would assume that there's a lot of consideration going into that with agriculture right now.
I mean, I'm hearing anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 an acre. Mm-hmm. They're offering these people for 20 years.
Yep.
I could just say no.
Help pay your taxes, you know, and that's what some of the they're
regarding the state's review process that they have for the large projects. I mean, given all their other ridiculous decisions they make based on green energy, I would think farmland's at the least of their concerns.
Ag and Markets is involved with it, and they do have some standards on it, but yeah, they want the projects to go through.
So far, you know, at least through the Article 10 process, and ORES is different. The state has, for the most part, aligned themselves with local land use regulations. And, you know, a great example is right here in Steuben County. That's why Barren Wind Phase 2 has not developed in Fremont, because, you know, the Fremont has some height regulations in place in their renewable energy laws. And the state is, even though they have the authority to allow that project to move forward, the state hasn't yet. You know, they've been very reluctant to
override or overrule local land use planning. So how that's going to evolve, Scott, I don't know. And I know the Barron Wind project right now is, you know, with an administrative law judge, because Barron has requested that they just allow this project to move forward. And, you know, the administrative law judge is going to be the one that decides that. So, there's going to be a lot more to come with renewable energy. Couple of other things, just, for your information, we don't have an incentive with Family Life Network in Irwin, but we have been helping support Family Life Network in the town of Irwin in their approval process for that large project that they are they're proposing. And I'm happy to say that as of last night, the Zoning Board of Appeals gave Family Life their last variance. So now they can move through the site plan process to hopefully can construct that project in the town. We've been working with Wayland, which I think you know, on the redevelopment of the fire that they had a year ago in downtown. We've got a meeting next week with the new owner of all of those properties. They've all been sold. There's a new owner who is interested in developing those properties. So, you know, we're hopeful that we can advance a redevelopment plan with this new owner in the village of Wayland. On the infrastructure side, we are waiting for final approval on an ARC request to do a $1.3 million enhancement of the railroad track from State Route 415 up to the LP Building Solutions plant. We keep our fingers crossed. We're being told that, again, it's just getting the final signatures. That enhancement will include a new gated intersection at 415. And as soon as we get that approval, you'll see work begin to start on that enhancement from that intersection all the way up to the plant. There's going to be new trackage put in. It's going to increase the poundage of the track, which will allow for more trains to be shipped up, but reduce the number of train activity. So what that means is, you know, right now LP is being designed to bring in 8 trains, in a car set. So 8 cars at a time, but because of the track limitations, the railroad can only bring 4 at a time. So they would have to bring 4 up, go back and get 4 more and come back up. With this enhancement, we'll be able to bring all 8 up at once and take all 8 back. So it'll basically cut the number of train trips in half once we get this enhancement done. The last time I mentioned Hammondsport Sewer, I think I got some chuckles because I've been mentioning Hammondsport Sewer for lots of years. Contractors will be on site within 2 weeks. So that project is moving forward. You won't see a lot of work in the downtown area because they're going to be primarily working on the catchment area, which is up behind the school, through the summer, and won't do any of the work, or most of the work that is downtown won't be done until after Labor Day, once the tourist season is coming to an end. So that project, after been here 12 years.
Oh dear, will it stop the wine glass from running?
Ditches.
Tough mutter.
So, you know, that project is going well, as is the bath infrastructure project. You know, J.C. Smith has been doing a great job of managing, you know, all of that for us. And, you know, every time he comes to me and says, geez, I'm really thinking about retiring, I'm like, well, let's not, you know, you want to go to Wyoming for a couple of weeks, go to Wyoming. And when you come back, you know, we'll have more work for you. Workforce development is not, even though we are supposedly in a recession, workforce development is still a critical issue. And I was taught Bill's not here anymore. I was talking to Bill out in the hallway. The interesting thing we're seeing right now is, while we're seeing companies start to pull back on their spending, unemployment rates are still at a historic low in Steuben County and across the nation. And so, you know, with a typical recession, you see unemployment numbers go up, spending goes down because people are out of jobs, and suddenly the economy starts to soften. We're not seeing the loss of jobs with this recession. So people still have money, so they're still spending money. So you're not seeing the economy soften like it typically would. So I don't think that's going to change. I mean, you know, we've talked about the demographics here, for months and years. And I just, you know, we're going to continue to see employment openings, and we need to do everything we can as a community to continue to promote and support, you know, workforce development activities in the community. You know, one that we was new this year, and Jill was on the planning committee. You probably saw some press last week. The Growing Skilled Trades event was held in the town of Big Flats. It's in Chemung County. We had it there because they had space. But we were, you know, part of that event where they brought over 500 students from, I believe it was 17 school districts within the GST BOCES area, to the Big Flats Community Center, and the surrounding space that they had with their DOT department. And it was a hands-on event, you know, where they got to pick up a hammer, they got to, you know, read blueprints, they got to see, you know, bulldozers and, you know, other equipment operate. Great event. You know, it was in partnership with the Career Development Council, CSS Workforce New York, BOCES. We were involved, and a number of others. And, you know, the idea is to help generate the interest in the types of careers. One of the unique things about this with other activities that we've done so far is that the labor unions, the trade unions, were very involved in this and, you know, wanted to really drive this home. And they're hoping it's going to be an annual event. So, Great opportunity for the kids. In addition, on May 22nd, we've been working with the Corning Painters Post School District on a pilot event where we're going to be bringing in companies to do real actual job interviews, not a fake interview, not a practice interview. These are going to be real interviews for actual jobs. And these are going to be for soon to be graduates who don't have any plans after high school. You know, there's a lot of kids that are going to be graduating from the Corning Paint Post School District. Do we have numbers, Jill, on how many?
70 as of February. It could have come down. So we're thinking, you know, 50 to 60.
They just have no plans after school. So, you know, the idea is let's give them an opportunity to go to work and not just a practice job interview. So we'll see how this goes with Corning Painted Post and see if it's something that could be expanded, you know, beyond that after this year. And again, the hope is capturing these youth before they leave school. It's, you know, we have to engage them. So the only other thing that I wanted to mention, you know, I'm happy to answer any other questions. We talked about renewable energy a little bit, and, you know, Jill and I were at a conference in February, and we were hearing from, you know, the state's, you know, energy people, and we were hearing from, you know, NYSERDA, and they've got a new economic development team. And they were talking about, you know, all of these companies that are coming to invest in renewable energy. And it started a conversation with the state about where do we fit as, you know, Steuben County in this because of our generation capacity. And, you know, when I talk about our generation capacity, you look at the Southern Tier as a whole. Since 2019, there have been 55 renewable energy projects that have come through IDAs for IDA benefits, which has increased capacity on renewable generation by 1,505 megawatts. We are nearly, the Southern Tier is nearly 500 megawatts more than any other region in the state as far as our generation, and most of that is in Steuben County. We lead the state in renewable generation. And the question I asked these folks at the state was, how do we marry generation with what would be traditional economic development and job creation? You know, are there companies who are interested in coming to a community where they can be actively engaged with renewable and green generation? And the response was, absolutely. There's a lot of European investments that are looking at the United States now that they want to come to a community to be able to say, we want to be 100% renewable. We want to be operating with 100% renewable electricity. So we're starting those early conversations with the state about how do we as Steuben County position ourselves to take advantage of that and take advantage of the fact that we've got all this generation. So we aren't just sending that power into the grid. And there's some complexities around policy in New York State and the fact that they're contracting to put this money into the grid. But we're starting to raise the question and have the conversation. I tell you this only because I want this body to know that, you know, we're trying to think beyond just the project and the generation capacity. And this is probably a 5-year play before we really start to understand and see investments, major investments, but the state knows about us now. The state understands where we are because even when we go to the state, they look at the entire state and the entire capacity of the state. But when we say Steuben County is generating more than any other county in the state, suddenly their ears perked up. So where this goes, hopefully in 5 years, I can come back and I can say, well, look at everything we've done because of this. But I did want this body to understand that, you know, we're trying to look beyond just the generation and how that impacts our community. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. Go ahead, John.
So I guess I had this question some time ago with all these new projects dealing with renewable energy. Do we know how much is subsidized with state taxpayers' dollars and federal taxpayers' dollars on any of these projects?
I can't.
You know, I see this influx of all these companies coming in, and I know there's got to be subsidies out there. I'm just trying to figure out where those dollars are coming from.
Those dollars are, I mean, the subsidies they're getting from the state and the federal government are coming from
our But do we know what the percentage of a project is?
That. I would be lying if I threw out a number. I cannot tell you that. Jill, have you seen any statistics on how much these renewable projects are subsidized?
Especially at the federal level, that's not something we would get into. I mean, with all that money coming down the pike, it's going to be substantial. But on our application, we have a line that sometimes they're reimbursable too, so the companies have to front the money. So it's not always apparent when the project is completely built, how much money.
Well, I think it would be important for the general public to figure out how much we're subsidizing these and what it's really costing us for green energy.
Well, and I will also say that sometimes that subsidy is hidden in the state's purchase contracts, because like all of the large renewable projects are getting power purchase agreements through NYSERDA. So the state is actually buying or guaranteeing that power is going to be purchased, you know, through a contractual relationship with the company. So
they're trying to hide the subsidy.
Those subsidies, you know, likely at least at the state level, are buried into that purchase contract and that price that they're paying for that renewable energy.
Yeah, and there's also income tax credits, and then you know we're going to be having higher electric rates, but probably if we're the area that these are being constructed in, our area is probably subsidizing at the least, because that money, a lot of the money from the subsidies is coming into our communities.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a, you know, catch 22 on whether you think it's good or bad state or federal policy. A lot of the money from those subsidies is actually coming into here if they're here.
It's like us getting a state grant to build a rail line. You know, we're getting a subsidy to build that rail line. Again, whether you agree with the policy around renewable energy or not, you know, Aaron is correct. You know, we're getting the largest piece of that subsidy into Steuben County to leverage that generation. Now, I can tell you what our subsidies are. I can tell you what our benefits are. We do cost benefit analysis. We understand that, but we're a small piece of what the overall subsidized amount.
We can rest assured that the state and federal governments do not understand what the full extent of it is.
Come on, man.
Dana Lyon.
Dana Lyon is all I will say is that I'm just going to stand here with a smile on my face. there will be an announcement now that the budget is getting approved. I'm certain there will be an announcement imminently on the next round of funding for those projects.
How about Phillips?
Phillips is there's actually starting to get ready for the rest of the work, the remaining work, which is the pad. They're going to pull up the pad. And they're going to clean up what's underneath the pad. They've done their assessment. DEC has wanted them to wait until the risk of snowfall has subsided, because what they don't want is they don't want the pad to get pulled up, have a snowpack on top of the ground where the contaminants are. Right now that pad kind of caps it and seals it. And if they remove that and then there was snow and the snow melted, then there could be groundwater infiltration, a risk of that. So DEC has told Phillips they wanted them to wait. All word is, from Phillips is that the cleanup will be done this year. Yes.
Is Amazon up and running?
Yep. Every morning about 10:30, I see all the white trucks go past our office. they are up and running. I've heard no complaints. There's about 200 white vans every night in the Simmons and Rockwell parking lot. That's where they stage the vans, and they head out. They start releasing them. And I say 10:30. It's sometime between 9 and 11. You start seeing, vans go out. So if you see white box vans that have Enterprise on the side, those are Amazon trucks. So just, keep notice, and you can even see them on the highway. We were heading up to a youth sports match on Sunday up in Buffalo, and we're driving past Bath, and you just, there's lines of these white box vans, and those are all Amazon.
Wow. Yeah. Placed orders on Amazon, and it says I'll place it on a Saturday afternoon, and it's coming Sunday morning somehow. I'm like, what's going on there? And sure enough, it shows up.
Yep.
I had a friend from Simmons tell me that they put an order for 600 of those vans in like 2 or 3 years ago for Enterprise. And they're just starting to fill that order now. That's how long it took.
All you have to do is just keep an eye out for a white box van, and you'll see them all over Bath. I mean, they're at Dunkin' Donuts, they're at Quick Fills. They're just everywhere. And those are all Amazon vans.
How about Northside Place?
I have not gotten an update from Reedman. I mean, other than they are constructing, or they have been constructing. I don't think they're going quite as fast as what they had originally intended. But I don't know if that's because of the lease up or just winter and construction cycles. So I can find out. I can reach out to David Reedman and ask about that. Yes.
So do you think from the fallout of the failing of these banks, these large banks, that the surviving banks will raise the hikes, that'll cause some sort of recession?
I don't think the Feds will necessarily allow that. I also think that we have a very, very strong regional banking system. I say regional, I mean, they seem to be getting, the region seems to be getting bigger and bigger, but you look at the history of the community banks and the Five Stars and the Chemung Canals, and they're have traditionally been very conservative in their portfolio. So they don't have huge numbers of, we're just going to focus on the tech industry, or we're just going to focus on the wealth. And I think that protects our regional banking industry. How that impacts national banking and the fallouts, I think I'm sitting back, we're sitting back like everybody else is, trying to figure that out. But the banks that have been failing have been these banks that have large deposits of, very wealthy, high risk, types of businesses and deposits in them. And those are the ones that seem to be failing.
Well, and if they raise rates more, part of the problem with some of them failing is when the Fed raised the rates, it devalued the bonds that were their liquidity holding to be able to get out of it. So that kind of creates a problematic cycle if rates get jacked more.
I just read an article where Elon Musk said that he thought these failing banks going to cause other banks to raise their rates, causing a recession. So.
Yeah, I think we're already in a recession. So I'm just not sure. I don't think
that's going to affect us.
Yeah,
right. I see what you're saying.
Depends on how you define it.
Any other questions for Mr. Johnson? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the update.
Okay. So we have the coffee cart. issue?
Yeah, it would be executive session for lease of real property.
Motion.
Don't wait a minute. Let me say something. So if you call it economic development, and I put quotes, just to give you an update on the dispensary, the cannabis dispensary in Corning, economic development, right? They're having major issues trying to figure out the state law versus local law. This council just approved on Monday the local law defining location and hours, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it is in some conflict with what the state cannabis, the Office of Cannabis Management has said. So yesterday was a planning meeting. They were supposed to look at the architectural diagrams and all the stuff that was supposed to happen with this dispensary, and they tabled it because they still, as we had told them, you wouldn't know back a year and a half ago, whatever it was when we were talking to them, you don't know what is planned. They don't, can't, the Office of Cannabis Management doesn't even know what they're doing. So they're at a standstill right now with the dispensary. Oh, you have some
called an economic development.
Yeah.
The state is not inducing any cannabis projects with economic development incentives because they define the cannabis industry as a closed market. So it can only happen in New York State. So they're not going to provide any state tax dollars to support economic development activities.
But there was that $200 million that was supposed to help from the state to help them find a place, rent the place, renovate it, and get it ready.
But the traditional economic development programs, the state will not support the cannabis industry. It's a closed market.
Seems like with a support for green projects. That
I'm surprised we're not hearing this from your fellow legislator in the Corning District.
Mm-hmm. Don't know what to tell you,
John.
So this morning I heard that they're raising the tax on a pack of cigarettes by a dollar, which will bring it over $5 and something to stop smoking. And yet we legalize marijuana. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
You don't want me to get on that one, but
they're going to try to ban tobacco.
But they didn't restrict menthol or flavored tobaccos because that is. That would impact a disadvantaged group of people that prefer those.
Okay.
And they expect it's a $20 million reduction in state tax by increasing it by a dollar. They're planning on less people buying cigarettes because we'll just go over the border to PA and buy them.
So the county for the cannabis dispensary profits, obviously the county's going to get a little bit, right? And the city's going to get a little bit and the state's going to get a big chunk.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And then their hope is that they'll get rid of the black market, which is ridiculous. But anyway.
Well, if you read that state budget message we got yesterday from NYSAC, they did add additional language and laws about the black market and better ways that the state can now go in and shut them down.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did we have a motion for executive session?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. We're in executive. Yes.